Curtis Sliwa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
And why, oh why, Juliet Huddy, are we coming in with a Pearl Jam jammy?
Because he's talking about Eddie Vedder, beautiful and wonderful and talented. Eddie Vedder is talking about JFK's brain, and we will be talking about JFK's assassination.
Wait a second. You're kidding. This song is about JFK's brain that was splattered all over the streets of Dallas
rock
in front
and roll
of that book
is,
depository.
Rock and roll is rough. It's edgy, Curtis. Don't play games in rock and roll.
You see, if you would have played this song prior to me coming into this studio, I would have gone ixnay on this.
Wait, hold on. Okay, no. And I'm
protecting
you, Justin.
Why didn't you play the police? Why didn't you play the police
because
song
you said,
about JFK?
Okay, Justin and I debated this. I suggested the police because there's a line in Born in the 50s where they say, my mother cried when President Kennedy died. And he said, well, there's a Pearl Jam song as well, the brain thing. And we brought it to you. You are the one who did this.
Oh, well, this
you
is
you chose
why.
Pearl.
This is
do you
why.
Not
because,
remember this?
Yeah, because
this
I didn't
happened
wanna,
10 minutes ago.
I didn't want to have the image in my head again of Sting there with that shrimpy short dwarf, you know, from the Amazonian rainforest.
What?
Who has like, what can we call it, plates in his ears and a plate in his mouth.
Okay. Well, what does that have to do with it? I'm confused.
The police.
What?
Yeah.
The police. Sting?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I had an image of Sting. You see, you know now that
that is like strange places.
I am now decompressing from my oxycodone day yesterday, my hillbilly heroin day. We're going to be talking about that later on, as the president has declared a health emergency about the very drug that I take from time to time and that other people take and abuse.
You seem
on a regular basis.
I know that you weren't feeling well yesterday, but you seemed really together. You were able to, you know, formulate ideas and sentences.
See, without the oxycodone, the hillbilly heroin,
right? What would have happened?
I would not have been able to function with the colitis and the ileitis crashing together in my stomach at the same time.
What, so were you nauseous or were you, what was going on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was, seconds away from projectile vomiting. That could have gone in your direction.
Good Lord. Well, I think it would have been blocked by a bunch of computers and microphones.
Exactly. You see, management would not have cared if you got splatted. But
I would have
the
actually
microphones in the console, that would have been it. I could have been fired for that.
I actually would have taken care of you. I would have run over. I would have been selfless, and I would have tried to help you.
Do me a
then
favor.
I would have been violently
Juliet,
ill.
Under no circumstance, if I'm on
do
the
you
ground,
ever want me to touch you?
If I am turning blue, do not give me CPR, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
You heard that here, folks.
I would rather die. I would rather die
because
a slow, torturous death.
Okay, so now, if that ever, God forbid, happens, and I do, out of, you know, the Florence Nightingale love in my heart for you, then you may sue me, potentially.
No. What
okay,
I'll
so
do
let's
is
clarify
just do this
cause
first. No, don't do this first. Make sure you use a dental dam first before you ever try to use CPR first aid on me.
Okay,
make
I'll
sure
keep that in mind. Okay, Justin is about 10 feet away. He's
but anyway, we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast on the 50,000 powerful watts of sound to all of you, courtesy of NJDie.com. And I see that your fingerprints are all over it. Fess up. Or I may
that's
have to get
nothing.
The Spartan Detective PI service on you. Juliet Huddy, are you writing a book, Killing O'Reilly?
No. Oh. I cannot speak about my time at Fox, nor can I speak about my departure or really anybody there.
But there is a guy out there in New Jersey, apparently a very well-known guy in legal circles, who has thrown down the gauntlet and is daring O'Reilly to come at him.
Well, it sounds like that's going to be happening. I would just like to clarify for the record that I am going to be quoting from a HuffingtonPost.com website article.
And you're saying this is not you he's talking about?
I am not saying anything.
What are you taking, the freaking Fifth Amendment
the
here?
Fifth. Let's pretend like we're in court here.
Okay.
Sometimes I feel like I am on the defense with you.
Okay, counsel.
Okay, yes. Well, why don't you explain the latest with this?
A guy, quote.
Michael Panter.
Right, without implicating you, although it certainly sounds like me to be you. But then again,
some have suggested it is. I have no comment.
Right,
on this
but it could
all.
Be others, because there's quite a few people that had settlements from the Fox News channel who were dealing with O'Reilly. So could be any one of half a dozen. But anyway, the guy makes the case that he was in a car when O'Reilly was calling this woman in question, that I believe is Juliet Huddy. But
no, no comment on this.
I have no documentary proof to that. I cannot establish DNA verifying evidence yet. But I'm gonna
work
my best.
You'll never touch me, and you'll never get my DNA.
So apparently, O'Reilly is totally in like a spin mode of his own, and he needs to get at one of his accusers, a female accuser. So he calls up the woman in the car, who happens to be working at the Fox News channel, who was also a target of his leching and perving. And he says to her, while she has it on speakerphone so that this young man, this young man friend of hers, can hear, I need you to dig up dirt. You live in the same apartment building as this woman. Do you know what her sexual practices are? Do you know if she uses drugs? I need whatever you can get on her. Look, please, I need this so desperately. Now you've got to push forward.
So this man, Michael Panter, who went to Harvard Law, former New Jersey assemblyman, he decides, as all of this news about...
By the way, was he a Democrat or Republican?
He is a Democrat.
Oh, how would you know?
It's in the HuffingtonPost.com.
See? You see already a lead here.
I'm reading it right in front of me.
Oh, okay.
Yes. He decided that he felt that since he didn't have a non-disclosure agreement,
yes,
he would be able to speak about this. And he posted a long, very, very lengthy Facebook post talking about what he heard. And again, he's saying, look, this woman that I was dating is in a non-disclosure agreement, so therefore she can't talk about this publicly,
question.
I can.
Question, okay, because I'm trying to establish who this woman is, and I really
I don't really think it even matters, does it?
It does to me. Were you married at the time?
This is 2011, I believe he's talking about. No, I was not married.
Oh, okay. So there is a possibility, unless you were just cheating on your spouse at that time.
but I was not married.
Let's put that aside.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say in his blog that it would have been almost fruitless for any of those who were perved on or preyed on by O'Reilly to go to HR in Fox News Channel, because apparently when they did, all it did was rally up the forces to support O'Reilly instead of saying, hey, wait a second, we've got an allegation here. We have to do due diligence. You know, this woman may have been a victim of O'Reilly.
Well, let me read you what the Huffington Post says. Panter, sure. This Mike Panter said that minutes before O'Reilly called Panter's girlfriend, received a phone call from a Fox News executive. He said he believed the caller was Diane Brandy. This is Mike Panter says he believes the caller was Diane Brandy, who was at the time the chief corporate counsel at Fox News. Brandy went on voluntary leave from her job earlier this month. According to Panter, the executive said that she had recently met with O'Reilly and Bill Shein, then a co-president of the network, and that O'Reilly would be in touch about a sensitive matter shortly, and shortly thereafter, O'Reilly called.
So we're
woman.
Not talking Russian collusion here. We're talking Fox News Channel collusion with O'Reilly.
That is the allegation by Mr. Panter.
Right. That doesn't go any higher. Yeah, Bill Shein, who is basically the mini-me to Roger Ailes.
He's a very powerful man at the time, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And then you have the woman in charge of HR who was...
she was chief counsel, so I don't know.
Right.
Would you say she's in charge of HR?
No, but she's responsible to keep everyone separate, you know, not to sort of bleed in.
Right.
She shouldn't be confiding to O'Reilly what victims are claiming he did to them. She's supposed to keep everything on opposite sides. heads, come up with a conclusion, bring it to Murdoch and the company bigwigs, and then let them figure out what to do. Apparently, according to this guy, she did not. She was stacking the deck in favor of O'Reilly against the women who were questioning him and bringing it to the attention of HR.
Well, this was my point when I was on Megyn Kelly's show the other day. I said, you know, I don't know if anybody listening agrees with me. I have a feeling most of you do, that when you go to human resources, essentially you're putting a big bullseye on your back because, yeah, in my opinion, human resources, especially at the bigger companies, is to protect the bosses, to protect the higher ups.
Well, it's interesting that this blog comes out today because the aspiring Italian starlet, who was preyed upon and perved on by Harvey Weinstein, who then actually went to the police.
Mm-hmm,
she didn't
right.
go to HR. She didn't go to Miramax. She knew, even though she was from Italy, that would be a waste of time.
Right.
She went to the NYPD. They wired her up like a Christmas tree, the sex crimes unit. And that's how we heard Harvey perving on her and admitting he had perved on women before.
Pleading with her to come back into his hotel room. And he'd be nice. He wouldn't touch her.
So today, I believe it's in the Daily News, she actually advises women, and to a degree, men who are mm-hmm. in that same situation of being preyed upon.
Well, yes, and it does happen to men, absolutely.
Right. To forget HR, going to HR, because they're going to lose it. They're going to file it in the round filing cabinet, or they're going to tell the suspect of the investigation exactly what you are alleging, and then all hell is going to break loose on you. She said, take it to the NYPD. Take it right to your nearby precinct. File charges against the individual. Do not go to HR.
But it's very sad, though, because when she took it to the NYPD, it never went further. Cy Vance decided not to prosecute.
Right. The NYPD did its job. They came up with the
That's
documentary
true.
Evidence.
Absolutely, they did.
But Cyrus, white shoes, wine me, dine me, pocket line me, and I'll release your clients, Vance, took a contribution from Miramax attorney at that time,
Isn't
David
that
Voir.
Funny how that works?
And Abram Witz, who was the lead attorney. So he bagged about $50,000 in campaign contributions for those representing Weinstein.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the case went away.
Right. Right. Interesting how that works. Very quickly, though, just to wrap up this previous story we were talking about. Yesterday on Twitter, Mr. O'Reilly tweeted, it's so strange this is what we do now, but he wrote, had to commence legal action against a man lying about me. From now on, all defamation will be challenged in court, period. Enough, period. He also, his attorneys released a statement said that they were also going to go after the woman, the quote-unquote ex-girlfriend of Mr. Panter. So Mr. Panter said in an interview with, I believe, the Huffington Post that I would think they would be a little smarter than that if they read a little bit about my background. Again, he went to Harvard Law and he's a very, very bright man.
Well,
and also he said this was an interesting line. You don't have to be a lawyer to know that the absolute defense of defamation is that you are speaking the truth.
Right. And I've been the subject of that kind of a trial by an imam, Siraj Wahaj, years ago in the aftermath of 9/11.
Mm-hmm. And what happened?
They were trying to knock me off of WABC because what I was saying is you have to put mosques under surveillance. There's been some gun trafficking in some of the local mosques.
Right.
He took me to court, sued me for $6 million defamation in Brooklyn State Supreme Court. The jury came back. They deliberated all of 10 minutes.
Wow.
Innocent of all charges.
Now, how much did you have to spend, though, on your lawyers?
Not as much. Not as much. It was really a case where the attorney took it up based on the principle. As opposed to looking for a big payday and a big retainer. It cost some coin, but nothing compared to my divorce cases and my child support cases, in which collectively now I owe $500,000.
Oh, fantastic. So should we go fund me? Should we start one of those?
No, you're
I bet you'd probably get a lot of money with that.
Yeah, you're fine. You are absolutely fine. Yeah, trust me, if it's you or any other number of other women that O'Reilly perved on, this is typical bombastic reaction. I'm going to sue you. Eric Bolling did exactly the same thing. Remember when it emerged that pictures of him showing his schlong that he had sent to other women? I'm going to sue. Nothing. It's all hot air.
Well, and in some cases, it may be the person who's being accused wanting to just throw something out there so that he, you know, it's kind of a publicity sort of spin tool.
Well, look for on Amazon.com coming up soon a book by Juliette Huddy.
Stop.
Killing O'Reilly.
I did not say that, Mr. Curtis Sliwa.
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. When we return.
Oh, take a breath.
The president.
Sigh of relief.
Right. The president promised that he would drop the whole file on the JFK assassination. Psych! He faked this out. All
well,
the good stuff, he deleted.
Hold on. That's not necessarily his fault on that one.
Oh, no, no, no. Look, he said it, and then he amended it. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
No, it wasn't James Comey who dumped the JFK assassination file. It was the FBI under the orders of President Donald Trump, who earlier in the week said, I'm going to unleash the entire everything that has been collected.
Well, but he didn't. And that's because there were certain things that were still considered top secret.
What? Like what? This is back in the 60s.
Well, yeah, but there's some interesting stuff.
People, everyone's dead.
There's this one memo that came out that I noted when I was sifting through. It was a CIA memo from 1969 from the political officer at the U.S. Embassy in Mexico. He met with this Mexican playwright who apparently told him a story about how she was at a party just days before in Mexico, days before the JFK assassination, and she saw Lee Harvey Oswald with two Americans. And this story ended up going to the CIA and the FBI poo-pooed it, but this is still a bit, there's still a big question about this.
Now, are there pictures of the two Americans?
I don't know, because interestingly enough, there's the first page of this memo and the last page, but there are like 80 or something documents in the middle that are nowhere to be found.
The reason why that is so important is because, remember, during the primary campaign, heated as it was between Ted Cruz and then citizen Donald Trump.
Yes.
On the morning of the Indiana primary, remember, as Donald Trump claimed that his father was
Ted Cruz's father.
That's right. Aiding and complicit with Lee Harvey Oswald in the assassination of JFK.
His father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald's being, shot. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. What is this, right prior to his being shot? And nobody even brings it up. I mean, they don't even talk about that. That was reported, and nobody talks about it. But I think it's horrible.
Right. There was a picture out there that reportedly shows Rafael Cruz standing with Lee Harvey Oswald.
I mean, what was he doing with Lee Harvey Oswald shortly before the death, before the shooting? It's
crazy.
Horrible.
Now,
I mean,
that was Ted Cruz then, and remember, they didn't get along. It was like ammonia and bleach, Trump and Cruz. Now they get along splendidly. So do we think that maybe the president had second thoughts and said, we need to redact that because I don't want to implicate his father in the assassination plot against JFK?
I think that the report, which apparently originally came out in the National Enquirer, was probably not true. And the fact that Brian Kilmeade from Fox and Friends is even entertaining this is hysterical.
Well, now, the other report is that the KGB believed that LBJ had his fingerprints all over the assassination.
Yes.
And he feared that some crazed general, you know, at SAC Air Force Command in Nebraska would suddenly order one of the bombers. Remember the nuclear bombers that were always in the air to just drop death and destruction on Moscow.
And maybe it would be justified here in the United States because our hearts and minds would be so anti-Soviet that we would just want them wiped out completely.
But think of it. Who recently wrote a book directly linking LBJ to the assassination of John F. Kennedy? But Roger Stone, who's been implicated as having had collusion with the Russians in the Trump campaign.
Oh, I'm so confused by all of this. Where do I go? Which controversy do I hold on to?
Right. Well, would he have had access to the KGB files that are now being released in order to write his book that actually did quite well out there in the marketplace, which he directly implicated LBJ?
How would he have had that access?
Well, because he's always colluded with the Russians, as much as he denies it.
Ah, very interesting. Look at that. That's your conspiracy. So which conspiracy theory are you going with?
I pick LBJ.
You think he did it?
Oh, LBJ now, hated Kennedy.
Did he do it in concert with Ted Kennedy, as some people have bantied about?
No. I think it was a Texas thing. It was a totally Texas thing.
Because what would be the reason?
Because he wanted to be president.
That would be the only reason.
Oh, and he hated Kennedy. He hated the Kennedys with a passion. Everybody knew that.
I don't know. I like this Mexican story.
But anyway, on that note, let's get our news headlines from Deborah Valentine.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Wow, getting me ready for Halloween. Who is this, Juliette Huddy?
This is called 12 Foot Ninja, a band out of Australia. But they like, listen to this. They get jazzy, and then they go very harmonic. Listen.
Now,
here we go. They're going to start going crazy in a minute.
They are?
Yeah. Oh, they're going to rock out in a second.
Let's take a listen here. I want to hear them
here
go psycho.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, I like this. I love Ryan Mogulooch. Make sure you give me the link. And don't do a fugazi on me like you did the last time with Pain. This is good. This is good, Juliette.
Thank you. And you know, my taste in music is,
no, it is
spot
very good.
On, baby.
Very good. But did you choose this song by 12 Foot Ninja?
It's called Invincible. And I think it's pretty obvious why I chose this song to lead into this next topic.
Because of Comrade Bill de Blasio.
Some people just think they're invincible and are Teflon and can bounce off all of the accusations and allegations and charges. But somehow, I just feel like maybe the tides are shifting just a little bit.
Well,
just a little bit.
We had our shot at bagging and tagging the mayor on these allegations of him being wine-dined and pocket-lined by contributors and then getting favors. You scratch my belly, I scratch yours, pay for play.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the U.S. attorney under Preet Bharara, he had just left, and so was Kim, who replaced him, said, we're not going to indict. And then Cyrus White Shoes Vance said, we're not going to indict, although he had taken a very sizable donation from the law firm representing Bill de Blasio what were seven different investigations about his corruptive ways at City Hall.
Well, the funny thing is that if you look at the cover of the Daily News today and the New York Post, they both have the same thing. And it, once again, it brings up the question, can you buy City Hall?
Oh,
quid
no doubt.
Pro quo. And the fact is that when you actually listen to read what's gone on here, I think the answer seems to be yes.
Well,
that, like, very clearly, yes.
Let me tell you about the R&R boys.
Okay.
Reichnitz and Reichberg. These are two Orthodox Jewish guys, mm-hmm, who were moving up the ladder in real estate, and they were dabbling in other businesses. And they recognized early on, I got to influence the cops, I got to influence local officials, but if I really want to get ahead in this business,
right,
I got to tap into the mayor.
Which is smart, because the mayor taps into everything, every agency, every bureau.
But
normally,
the mayor would shield himself from these individuals.
Well, corrupt mayors don't, but good mayors do.
Right. But in this case, and this all came about yesterday because the former correctional department union chief, who's on trial for corruption himself, for stealing union funds and investing it in a deadbeat hedge fund. That just went belly up. Norman Seabrook. He wasn't the object of the testimony yesterday, but Reichnitz, who is the cooperating witness, mm-hmm, who bribed Seabrook, who bribed others, just leveled in on the mayor as the U.S. attorneys were questioning him.
Yep.
And he said, yeah, I hooked up with his fundraiser, Ottinger. And Ottinger said, how much can you raise for us? I said, $50,000, $100,000. He goes, that's good, because the more you get, the more we give. That's essentially what he was saying. The more you get for us,
yep,
the more we give. And then the mayor, who's been lying about this consistently, if he was strapped to a lie detector machine, he would blast himself into the hereafter. He actually went to the office of Reichnitz, sat with him, and said, how much can you pony up for the various endeavors that I'm fundraising for? And Reichnitz said, Mr. Mayor, you know, you just tell me.
Whatever you want, buddy.
He then gives Reichnitz his cell number, his personal cell number, and he says, if you have any problems, you call me directly.
And his email, by the way. No, de Blasio has said, I wasn't close to this guy, but this Reichnitz guy, testimony, so he's under oath, says, look, not only did we talk, but I had his phone number and I called him every week. We had multiple conversations, you know, week after week after week. Now, this is the kind of stuff that you can prove or you can disprove. I mean, there are phone records.
Right.
This should be.
You now say to yourself, because since this was the cooperating witness that the U.S. attorney had when they were investigating de Blasio, as did Cyrus Whiteshoes Vance, why did they not indict de Blasio? You know, you followed enough cases as a gumshoe reporter over the years. The DA wants to indict someone, they indict him. Now,
exactly.
They may lose in court, but they can get an indictment before a grand jury.
So what's your feeling here? Somebody else playing quid pro quo?
No, because I can't say that Preet Bharara was a friend of corrupt politicians. We know that not to be true. He vigorously prosecuted and got guilty verdicts against the Hyman Roth of Democratic politics, Sheldon Silver, and Dean the Dream Skelos, the Republican leader of the state Senate in Albany. So you can't say that.
But
Whiteshoes Vance, yeah, we know he's paid for play. You make a donation to him, which de Blasio's law firm did, a sizable one, and all of a sudden he sees no evil. He's got window shades on his eyes.
Same guy that we were talking about in our previous segment when we were talking about the Italian woman and Harvey Weinstein, the Italian woman who went to the NYPD. So basically, based on this guy's testimony yesterday, if you donate big, really big, you basically can create your own little NYC utopia.
Yes, and you have priority over everyone else. City Hall is definitely for sale. There was a book written about that by Jack Newfield years ago about the Koch years. Because in his third term, basically everything was up for sale in City Hall. Because Koch would just turn a blind eye to his cronies' theft. Because if you stroke Koch, he was a peacock. He loved you. Sort of like Trump. You say nice things about Koch, he loved you. You said
it's
a bad
thing. But it's the ephemeral loyalty.
You're on the outside looking in. So Donald Manus, all the other corrupt officials, they were given a pass by Koch. But de Blasio now has a different system. It's basically, you don't have to deal directly with my sycophants. You can come directly to me. You make the donation.
Well, I don't know how he finds the time to do this because he shows up to work at 11 o'clock.
Well, I'll tell you,
or thereafter.
I'll tell you exactly what he does. There is a place in Park Slope where he hangs out on Friday afternoons.
Not the gym.
No, Toto's. It's a gin mill, a dive.
Oh, we should go there.
We should.
A little field trip. Get Mongolooch. Justin?
And he doesn't even stay in the back part of the restaurant gin mill. He sits in the window, and it's like the Friars Club. Remember the old Altacockers would have two phones?
Yeah.
This is what he does.
So it's basically like
he raises money on Friday afternoons.
That's phenomenal. And he just has no bones about it.
No.
Just sitting there.
No.
It's like the Mafia Don.
Yeah.
Come on, kiss my ring.
He says, my vision is more important, that I implement my vision, my liberal, progressive, democratic vision, and if it means raising money, you know, to support all my endeavors, I don't care where the money comes from.
Is he drinking while he's doing this, or is he just merely just
Never been known as a drinker.
Face. No?
No, okay, and I've been in his company. I've never known him as a boozer.
Sure, that must have been fun.
But he definitely loves to be wine-dined in pocket line. Ladies and gentlemen, shouldn't the mayor be indicted now that the lead witness, who the feds did not use and Cyrus Vance did not use, has testified in open federal court yesterday that our mayor is a crook? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go right to the phones. Juliet Huddy, it's Dave first up in the queue, calling from Brooklyn.
Yes, de Blasio definitely should be indicted. And also, people should realize that over the last 5 years, every major case of bribery and corruption involves Orthodox Jews involved in bribing and corrupting, getting their way in real estate and banking and housing, welfare fraud, child sex abuse, and nothing really happens. No one criticizes the Hasidic Jews or the Orthodox Jews.
David, I'm going to actually hold you back a bit, because in many of these cases, you're absolutely correct. Of late, there have been a slew of Orthodox Jews who have had business interests who have used this same technique to get access to City Hall. But they're not alone. They are certainly not alone.
Yeah, this guy, I mean,
the lobbyists are there constantly in City Hall. And they come in and they represent a wide variety of clients. And they know that City Hall is for sale.
Here's my question, though. So at one point, this guy testifying yesterday was saying that he was able to get the Lincoln Tunnel closed down so that his guy was able, his boss was able to sort of breeze through. I mean, this stuff would be, you'd be able to track this down, would you not?
Yeah, well, that was at the time when Banks was number two in charge of the police department under Kelly. So, not going to implicate de Blasio on that. That goes back to the Bloomberg years and Kelly overlooking that, because that occurred on his watch. That did not occur on Bratton's watch.
But the fact is that you know, de Blasio seems to have a lot of support, at least from the people who actually show up to the polls. I mean, the chances of him being reelected are strong.
Well, unfortunately, the polls indicate that he may overwhelmingly get elected. But who knows? Maybe some people will wake up, no longer be Rumpelstiltskin, and realize the stench from City Hall will emerge for another 4 years if you give him a license to steal again. Let's go to Fran in the Mazza Pizza. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Fran?
Juliet, you're the best.
Oh, Fran. Curtis, you rock.
I'm sorry, Juliet, you're the best. Curtis.
Yes.
Do you remember? I'm going to bring back a blast from the past. My little brother. Do you remember Jimmy Olsen?
Yes, I do remember Jimmy Olsen. In fact, I visited him in Jackson Heights at his law offices there off the number 7 train.
Little Tom, you did?
Yep, and he had been my intern here when yes, I did the morning show with Lisa at the time. It was Angels in the Warm.
Little Jimmy Olsen? That's really his name?
Oh, he was great.
No. It was my little brother, but he called him Jimmy Olsen because he's a wholesome sweet.
Gotcha.
And the bottom line is, I used to drive him in the morning, Curtis, and drop him off. You know what I mean? That's the kind of brother I am.
Yep. Yeah. No. So, you had a great brother, and we had discussed a lot about corruption. But what is your point about de Blasio?
Love you guys. Thank you so much. Real quick, the bottom line is this: de Blasio, when you have one scandal, you get away with it. Okay. But he's had so many different things come out over his term. He's got to go.
What do you make of the fact, Fran, that people still want to go out there and vote for him, as Curtis just said, and I just said, overwhelmingly likely that he will be the one who is going to be our next mayor again?
Absolutely. You know what I say to that? Look at what Bill and Hillary have done, Democrats. Just unbelievable the corruptions they get away with.
Well,
and you know what it is? The Democrats, they don't care, Democrats.
I think it's broader than that, than just Democrats. I think a lot of people are so jaded and skeptical, Juliet. They believe all officials are corrupt, and this is just part of what they do. And
isn't that sad, though? Can we just be the force that tries to wake people up? Yeah, I mean, I know you've been trying to do that forever.
That's why I became the New York State Reform Party chairman, and our candidate who's running in the general election against him, Sal Albanese, no one has ever accused of corruption in all the years that he served in city council and ran for mayor before. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. To the phones we go. Juliet Huddy in the house.
Hello.
Dino in New Jersey. Welcome to WABC, Dino.
Yes, how you doing? First of all, Juliet.
Yes.
My wife loved you. I loved you. I went on vacation in Florida when you used to be on Fox and Friends once. I was watching my parents' house. They loved you.
Oh. I'll send you the check after the show.
No problem. I mean,
thank you.
That was years ago, too. I don't even watch Fox and Friends, any Fox and Friends anymore. Anyhow, we should definitely indict that Sandinista. I mean, this guy's a rat bastard. I mean, when Oliver North was trying to help the Contras, he was there supporting the Sandinistas. He should go be president, mayor of what? What is that, Managua and Nicaragua?
Yeah, Daniel Ortega turned out to be a pedophile. It's interesting. He was down there working with the Sandinistas against Ronald Reagan, support of the Contras at that time, who were there to relieve Central America of the threat of becoming a communist-dominated state of Cuba and then the old Soviet Union. So, yeah, a double pox on that. And by the way, Dino, do you know where he spent his honeymoon with his wife?
No, I don't. Tell me.
Oh, I know this.
Havana. Yeah.
Really? Really? Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind going to Havana as a vacation tourist.
But
yeah,
not back
reasons.
Then.
No, but I believe.
Back then.
I believe that they visited the New Jersey State Trooper cop killer, Joanne Chesimar, a.k.a. Asada Shakur. I don't have the proof, but I will find it. And when I do, I will reveal
you
it here on WABC. They were there to see Asada Shakur, Joanne Chesimard, cop killer.
Curtis Lewa. Boom!
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa?
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
You know the dealer. The dealer is a man with a leopard ass in his hand.
7 minutes after the hour of one, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided for us to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. Juliet Huddy in the house.
Hello, sir. You have you had a relationship, a friendship with, and maybe you still do, with Eric Bolling, formerly of Fox News, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. We used to be like homeboys at the Fox Business Channel. He used to have me on his program
when he was just there. That's right. Well, there's some news yesterday. Remember, we heard about his son tragically passing away. Well, now the news came out that Eric Bolling's son, Eric Jr., died of an accidental opioid overdose, which sadly is something that we are hearing day in and day out. And I actually just sent out a tweet asking our listeners if they, I basically guaranteed somebody, you know somebody who has been affected by this, by the opioid crisis here in the United States, especially here in the tri-state area.
He was going to the University of Colorado in Boulder, which is more synonymous with 421, you know, smoking the fatties. And later on this hour, we're going to discuss, excuse me, what was that? 420. I'm sorry.
I thought there was some new thing.
I added a day to it. Okay. I was in a drug. The oxycodone is still wearing off that I had to use yesterday to get through the program. But
I'm glad he corrected you because I was like, oh no, what do I have to start looking this up now? I'm like not up with the drug lingo apparently.
Exactly. But later on in this hour, we're going to discuss for the potheads out there, smoking
pot. You
know
who you are.
Does that make you more sexually active? Make you fatter because you have the munchies, or just puts you to sleep? Because there is a study that would suggest that you become like a stallion, and all of a sudden you become like a voluptuous Venus flytrap under the influence.
Or does it make you babble like a magpie and not make any sense and forget what you're saying and make everybody annoyed with you?
Well, we'll
not that that's
that.
Ever happened to me.
But yesterday the president came to the bully pulpit. And in front of a huge phalanx of families,
ooh, I like that
relative
word.
Members and police and investigators announced that we are in a national health emergency because of the opioid epidemic.
This epidemic is a national health emergency. Unlike many of us, we've seen and what we've seen in our lifetimes. Nobody has seen anything like what's going on now. As Americans, we cannot allow this to continue. It is time to liberate our communities from this scourge of drug addiction. Never been this way. We can be the generation that ends the opioid epidemic.
And in fact, the president tagged on to that, Juliet Huddy, that more people now in the United States die from these overdoses than die in car crashes or as a result of gun violence.
Well, I would imagine it would be very, very easy to get hooked on this kind of stuff because you're, you know, any injury that you have, any sort of, you're not feeling well or pain, you're prescribed this stuff. And that's the gateway to abuse.
Well, number one, the opioids. I use opioids, as I've mentioned over and over, oxycodone, hillbilly heroin to deal with the pain from my colitis, ileitis. There's Percocet, there's Vicodin, the traditional.
All of that, yeah.
Right. And now they've added fentanyl.
Now, explain what fentanyl is.
Fentanyl.
Coming from China?
Fentanyl is like morphine. I've had fentanyl at times when I've had really bad pain.
What is it? It numbs you or spaces you out?
And there are people who get prescribed fentanyl. And to be honest with you, you know, we throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah,
you don't understand. Exactly. They have severe arthritis, rheumatism. They're in a fetal position. They can't move. With fentanyl, they can function normally as long as they take it according to the prescription and they don't start self-medicating. But it has flooded the market from Red China. And the president finally addressed that because that's the nemesis who is exporting fentanyl from their borders across ours.
The U.S. Postal Service and the Department of Homeland Security are strengthening the inspection of packages coming into our country to hold back the flood of cheap and deadly fentanyl, a synthetic opioid manufactured in China and 50 times stronger than heroin. And in 2 weeks, I will be in China with President Xi, and I will mention this as a top priority.
Now, he's halfway there, Juliet.
I bet that comment, by the way, makes a lot of people shake in their boots when they hear the packages are going to be inspected a little bit more closely, not just from China either.
But that is the smaller amounts of fentanyl that makes its way into the marketplace that normally is used to cut heroin. And then as a result, people over-D because they're either snorting, smoking, or injecting heroin, and it's just too toxic, and that's it. But a lot of it's brought in satchels, like you've seen, like powdered concrete, 100-pound bags.
Yeah, but from where?
From Red China, in the belly of the ships that are bringing all the same products in that storage area to Walmart, Target, you know.
Do these shippers know that this is happening, or is it just stuffed into whatever?
I believe they're complicit. There's so much money involved here, and it's made in factories.
Yeah.
Fentanyl is produced in factories in Red China with the acknowledgement of the government, because you can't do anything in Red China without the okay of the government.
Very good point.
And so it's going to require, if the president of Red China, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third, whatever his name is, if he doesn't accede to the demands of our president in 2 weeks, because I would suggest to the president you start stopping ships before they reach port and you start searching them.
Yeah, walk on the dogs and just start going through like a fine-tooth comb. But you know how many ships are coming into our ports?
Oh, yeah. But,
you drive through like Bayonne and you see all these cargo ships. It's like, do we begin?
The Arthur Kill, the Kill Van Cull, the Straits of the Barrens. Yeah. You're absolutely right. But if you start selecting, like out of every four or every six, you send a signal to Red China.
Let you watch out.
That you better stop this.
And I like the fact that the president is making this move. It's a good move. It's a strong move. And it's a necessary move. But the thing that I have a problem with is sort of his other way of tackling people who are starting to become addicted to these things. I mean, he brings up the fact that he doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he never did anything, which is fantastic and good for him. Listen to a little bit about what he says about that.
Don't drink. Don't drink. He was substantially older, and I listened to him, and I respected, but he would constantly tell me, don't drink. He'd also add, don't smoke. But he would say it over and over and over again. And to this day, I've never had a drink. The fact is, if we can teach young people and people generally not to start, it's really, really easy not to take them. And I think that's going to end up being our most important thing.
Just say no. I had lunch with him years ago, the president, when he obviously wasn't president, and he told me that story.
Did he let you on you?
No, he was fine.
So he was a true gentleman.
He was fine.
All right, but that's true of my father, my grandfather on my Polish side.
That he was a true gentleman or a lech?
No, yeah, but my grandfather was a lush.
You know,
you'd have to bring him out of the bar at 12 o'clock at night.
Oh,
my grandmother Anton, Wanda at that time, like a lot of men in that era. And my father saw that, and he never drank. And he's a merchant seaman for 46 years. Try to not drink when you're hanging out with merchant seamen.
My father never drank, never smoked, which is funny. I can't believe that my brother and I came from him. He same thing. You know, he saw a relative that was going way overboard, and that was it. That was enough for him.
And that's good.
Yeah.
But that doesn't affect the mass majority of the population.
Exactly.
What I did like is what the president talked about homeopathic and holistic alternatives to just taking opioids, which obviously big pharmaceuticals lobby legislators to make those products easily accessible to the general public.
I will be pushing the concept of non-addictive painkillers very, very hard. We have to come up with that solution. We give away billions and billions of dollars a year, and we're going to be spending lots of money on coming up with a non-addictive solution.
That was very, very good.
Is he talking about what we were talking about yesterday, that kratom plant from Malaysia. Yep. You crush it up, that type of stuff.
That works. There are other solutions out there. There are other pharmaceutical solutions that are non-addictive, mm-hmm. but there are also homeopathic, holistic solutions. Work for some, not for most. But then again, if you have enough alternatives, a wardrobe of options for a person who's strung out, something in that wardrobe might work for them. Anyway, let's open up the phones. What did you think of the president yesterday declaring a national health emergency because of the opioid addiction rate in the United States that has led to so many deaths? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And then like a tag team today, the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, who was sort of like Sergeant Friday, you know, and his penchant to want to blame everything on marijuana. He showed up at JFK Airport, and he said this about the president's address yesterday.
I was pleased the president talked about that yesterday. Not enough people are urging and saying, don't get started. You won't get addicted if you don't start. So we need to continue that message, too.
Well, that's a nice thought. I mean, it really, truly is a nice thought. And Mayberry was a lovely place, but it wasn't real. It wasn't realistic. You know, you see the kids in school, you see it. It's the cool thing to do. And that's why kids start smoking. That's why kids start drinking. And that's why kids start popping pills.
I'm telling you.
And other things.
I think we focus on the kids, and we have to, because we don't want them to get strung out. But I don't see that as being the number one problematic area in the country. I see that amongst adults more in my age categories, baby boomers like 45 to 60, 45
what, the pills?
To 70. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the kids are, I mean, they're dropping like flies. It's a horrible thing to say, but it's true with the, you know, the heroin stuff. It's like, when did that happen?
Well, the heroin, the fentanyl, obviously what I take, the oxycodone when it's not used properly, the Percocet, Vicodin, all of those. You go in the hillbilly country, you go down there with Rand Paul in Kentucky, right, where marijuana is the number one cash crop, no longer tobacco, mm-hmm. or with Mr. Bourbon himself, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and it is a flood with pharmaceutical products that big pharmacy has flooded into the marketplace with few, if any, restrictions. And remember, just recently, the president wanted a czar, you know, to lead this effort.
Yeah.
He was choosing Congressman Marino in Pennsylvania, who actually lobbied for big pharmacy, so he had to recuse himself. But everyone signed off on that.
Right.
Every Republican, every Democrat in the House and Senate, and Barack Obama. That's the power of big pharmaceuticals up on the hill, that they've got.
They're starting to get these
into
guys.
Into both sides.
They're starting to get these guys. There's a billionaire from a big pharma company out in, I believe it was Arizona, that was just busted. I mean, there are efforts across the country. Even in our area, a bunch of counties, New York counties, banded together, and they are basically coordinating themselves to get into a lawsuit against the big pharma companies.
Well, let's
19
go right,
pharma companies.
Let's go right to the phones. Juliet Huddy, it's Kathy in Midtown. Welcome to WABC, Kath.
Hello. Hello, Juliet.
Hi,
hello,
Kathy.
I'm calling. I think what the president did was great. It's a little too late for some of us. My son died in 2010 from an opiate overdose. I wish Barack Obama had done this. There's been many, many years now of people dying, dropping like flies. And nothing was done up until President Trump has done something. And hopefully it works for future generations, but it's a little too late for mine.
All right, Kath, we have to see if there's the follow-through. He said all the right things, but there was no money allocated, especially to provide treatment facilities. Only one out of every 10 addicts can find a bed somewhere in order to get rehab or treatment. And I realize a lot of them will wash out and they'll try a different rehab.
That's...
But I don't mind that.
You know what the problem is? You know what I think one of the big problems is? So many kids from 18 to 21 get hooked on these things because they're not allowed to go to bars. What did we do when we were their age? We went to bars and hung out and had a couple of beers. They're not allowed in bars. They're not allowed to
Kathy,
have alcohol. They get to go and have...
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 58.
Okay, so you're in my age category, much younger than us, is Juliet Huddy. So different generation.
Well, not that much younger.
But do you realize when we went to bars as kids, available also would be marijuana, LSD, ecstasy.
Ecstasy, really?
Yeah. Yeah, and do you
never
know?
Never did any of it, Curtis.
I know, but it was available. And do you know that our federal government has those drugs listed as Schedule One drugs? Ecstasy, which I've used, a party
drug. Which is terrible. It messes up your brain. I mean, it really does. It affects your brain.
But trust me, there are enough people out there who function who have used ecstasy.
No, but
marijuana.
There are enough that whose brains have been turned
to putty. LSD. Do you consider them more dangerous than cocaine, methamphetamines, methadone, oxycodone, or fentanyl? They are listed as being more dangerous by Jeff Sessions and the federal government than those drugs that I've just mentioned.
If marijuana is the most dangerous drug in the world because it is an entry-level drug.
Shut up.
Thank you, Michael Savage.
I don't know what you're talking about. But the point is, if we don't straighten that out, then if you're a young kid and you're looking at that, are you crazy?
Well, so what's the problem? Why are we not straightening that out?
848-WAB.
They don't believe it?
Because Trump and Jeff Sessions, they've never been drug users.
They're convinced that marijuana is the gateway drug.
Yep. And they're focusing too much attention on that.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
To the phones we go, Curtis. Julia, buddy.
Who would you like to go to?
Erica.
I love Erica. That's my mom's name.
Yeah, in New Jersey.
Oh, my mom is in New Jersey.
Welcome to WABC, Erica.
Hi, Curtis?
Yes, Erica.
Hi, I grew up with you. I was in New Jersey when you were wearing those red berets in Newark, New Jersey.
Not mom.
Yeah, I'm still wearing it. Haven't changed in 38 years.
Seriously.
But appreciate that.
He has not changed in 38 years.
We need more people like you now.
Thank you.
So I called the show because I'm a non-drug user. I grew up in New Jersey. I was very comfortable in not smoking pot. I could probably count on one hand how many times I threw up from alcohol. But I was very comfortable not doing drugs. And I would sit around my friends. They would go do it, come back, or whatever. But so you brought up a really good point about how people all have the drugs not to do it. Like, Trump has a pretty good track record. He has 2 out of his 3 kids who really never did drugs, I don't think, or alcohol. I think the Donald Jr. is the one that he said, you know, had a little bit of a problem in college but then came out of it. So his idea of, like, just don't do it worked with his kids. And that's great, but what are we supposed to do with these kids? I have a 14-year-old and 12-year-old boys, and you know, I tell them, don't do it. It's not worth it. Your brain is not formed until you're 25 years old. There's a film that starts on the back of your brain and goes to the front, and in boys, it's not done forming until you're 25. Women, it's a little earlier.
Well, Erica, that's actually very good, salient advice. I don't think there's anyone out there who has a handle on this, what to tell their children or even grandchildren, other than to advise them what the problems that could result if you start to indulge, if you start to use. But
not only physical problems, but, you know, problems with your lifestyle, problems with your job. I mean, you know, have them talk to people who have gotten hooked on drugs and lost everything, you know, or somebody who's currently going through something and you see what kind of hell they're going through.
Right, but it shouldn't be over exaggerated because then you're going to lose the kid. The kid is going to realize, no. You know, Reefer Madness was a film that some of our listeners grew up watching and they realized, that's not true. I smoked a joint. I didn't all of a sudden grow breasts as a male. I didn't all of a sudden start raping and pillaging in town. Anyway, let's go, if we can, to Chris, who I believe is calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Chris?
Hey, Chris.
Thank you for taking my call. Listen, Curtis, I seem to misunderstand you or don't understand exactly how you can talk about this when you glorify it as you take it on a daily basis for your pain from the problems that you have.
Yeah, because these drugs, if used the way they're prescribed, can help you over pain that is paralyzing and debilitating. For me, it's oxycodone, hillbilly heroin. For others, it's fentanyl or Percocet or Vicodin. But I want to be honest, because what happens is we throw the baby out with the bathwater. The president was talking about eliminating fentanyl, and I know of people, Chris, who are on fentanyl who would not be able to function without it.
Well, I find it disturbing that you glorify it because you you state from day to day, actually,
well, let me give you an
the night before.
Let me give you an example. I had a conversation with my surgeon who's going to take out like half my stomach sometime between now and the beginning of the year. He said you'll probably end up with a colostomy bag and a morphine pump.
Oh,
should I not
man.
Discuss that I'll be probably on morphine for a while I recover? Or should I just ignore talking about that because of the benefits of what morphine can do for people who are post-operative, going through tremendous pain, and without morphine, they would be suffering. They'd be climbing the walls. You see, we have to realistically discuss how to use drugs and how not to abuse drugs. But up next, we're going to go to the resident expert on marijuana, our own Juliet Huddy.
Oh, not really.
As to whether it turns you into a vixen, a viper, or a Venus flytrap. Yeah, sure you don't.
Oh, whatever, Curtis. I was just sticking up for you just now.
Yeah, yes, you were. Right now, we're going to tag off to Deborah Valentine for the news headlines.
Smack her.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Well, now it's all going apart. Whether we like it or not. Best I can tell, the world's gone to hell. We're sure gonna miss it a lot.
The sex bomb himself, Willie Nelson.
Now,
who
you
is
know,
he?
You know Willie Nelson?
No, I've never met him. I know that he. I know that he is popular with the ladies, and we may get some sort of insight into that whole world, pot smokers and sex, and sexy time, and all those wonderful things. Have you smoked pot before?
Yes, of course.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
I'm not saying you couldn't have, but growing up as a baby boomer, as I did in peace, love, and happiness times, Haight-Ashbury, Woodstock, ragweed, that's what it was then, was plentiful.
Ragweed?
It would give you a little bit of a buzz. It was
so it wasn't
and it stunk. When you would smoke it, it would stink out the joint. Nowadays, they have such strains because they perfect the buds and they're growing that they can give you a high for your head. They can give you a high for your libido. They can give you a high for your body.
You know, I didn't realize that. I mean, I know that these dispensaries have you can buy the what are they called? The edibles. And then you can buy, there are all sorts of different chambers and things that you can do. But I didn't realize that it would affect you. I just thought it would just be, the effect would be sort of how intense it was. I was just in Amsterdam.
Yes. Well of course. I mean, that's the epicenter.
Well, I didn't smoke anything. Am I allowed to admit this? I guess I am. Who cares? Whatever. But I had some of the space cake.
Yes.
And it really didn't do anything for me. I mean, I just kind of chatterboxed, but I didn't feel very different.
So I'm assuming it was laced with either marijuana or hashish.
I think it was, I don't know. My husband got it for me.
Okay.
But he said he went up to the counter and he said, give her, this is for my wife. She doesn't smoke. So just give her something mild.
So you became a chatterbox more than you normally are as a yenta.
I think I did. I did. But I had to deal with my husband who did smoke and who apparently, because he was a heavy metal guy, thought that he could have a little bit more than he should have had and was holding on to a post outside of this famous cafe, as they call them.
In Amsterdam.
Looking at me like a little child going, I'm frightened. I'm frightened. And he was literally begging me to take him home back to the hotel, but he couldn't move.
Hold on. Having been in Amsterdam... And
sorry,
in that
John.
Condition, right, and not having been in the red light district, which will scare the hell out of you.
We never went to the red light district.
Okay, but you see the windmills, you see the tulips, you see women wearing wooden shoes, you see people on bicycles,
yeah.
You see the canals.
Right.
That could be a little bit of a frightening experience.
It was a beautiful night. It was a lovely experience. We just had a wonderful dinner. We had met another couple from the United States. We ended up going to this place, this cafe with them. And next thing big, heavy metal guy is outside crawling, begging me to take him back to the room.
Okay, so he was under the influence.
He was.
Could have been either marijuana that had been spiked a little bit or hashish. Did he become like a stallion in the sack when you got back to
that was the problem. He was like, he immediately went to sleep. And I'm sitting there like, what?
Well, you realize there's a new study.
And it was the first night of our honeymoon, might I add.
What?
Might I add.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
The first night of Juliet Huddy's honeymoon in Amsterdam.
I'm so sorry,
which
John.
Which is the cannabis bowl. That's where... you know, they have their annual awards
yeah.
for growers.
Right.
You know, because they prepare buds and strains and they compete.
Yeah.
And your husband comes under the influence by eating what, a brownie or a space cake?
No, I had the space cake. He had the pot. Like they gave him, you know, the grass, whatever it is.
All right, so he smoked it.
He smoked it, and he was like, I was recording him as he was smoking it because nobody else at the table was smoking.
Well, can we put that up on our website?
I don't know. I'll ask him. He was like, yeah, man. He thought he was so cool. And I was like, do they not serve alcohol? I mean, this is like, I'm not interested in smoking. And literally 5 minutes later, he's I'm frightened, holding onto a post on the street
and
by the canal.
And then you get back to your 5-star top
and
shelf hotel room.
Snore City.
On a night in which you should have been amorous. Very amorous.
Yeah.
To have the urge to merge. And he goes to sleep on you.
He went to sleep on me. Well, we had another, like, 15 days of honeymoon, so it was okay.
Did he indulge any further in the 15 days?
What?
Did he return to the cafe?
In me or in the cafe?
Well, no, I'm assuming
We were only in Amsterdam for basically. It was a long layover, so we were only there for a night. So.
Okay, so there is a study out now.
He's probably going to kill
me. And I want our listeners to respond to this. That smoking pot actually induces your libido to want to have more sex, that you become sexually sensitive, you have an insatiable appetite for sex. This goes contrary to your husband, who is smoking a bowl in Amsterdam on your wedding night.
Well, it's more like
your
a
honeymoon.
Dump truck's worth.
Yeah,
but,
and then all of a sudden, he's sleeping on you. And no doubt you were buck naked and enticing him.
Well, no, I wasn't.
Probably
actually.
Dancing.
I put my sweatpants on, and I started freaking out because I was like, he brought a little back to the room, and of course he's sleeping, and I'm like freaking out because I dropped it. It fell all over my suitcase, and I'm going, oh my god, I'm going to be arrested.
Drug
I'm not even smoking
dogs,
this.
Right.
I know. I'm like, yeah, I'm screwed now. Thank, and not literally, but you know what I'm saying.
Well,
let's
find out from our listeners if in fact
this is horrifying. Can't believe I'm talking.
Smoking
about
pot or using pot, did it make you more sexually active? Did it make you fatter because you had the munchies? Or did it make you sort of somewhat slothful to the point where you were like Juliet's husband and you were cutting seeds?
John Fattaruso.
Yeah, you were snoring. You were snoring. Snoring,
oh,
Brian, snoring.
My goodness right. gracious. Right. Because,
very
by
good.
The way, Stanford University did a study, and they did a study over the course of 10 years. Women who were daily pot users said that they had sex an average of a little over 7 times during the previous month. Men said they had it 6 so basically the same thing, the same amount of times during the previous month, which was 20% more over the year than non-pot smokers.
Well, that's about twice a week. That's probably more than the average, you realize.
Depending on how long you guys have been together, I would imagine. I mean, I think that whole thing changes it, too. They went to they talked to people who were between the ages of, I think, 25 and 45, which would be ages where people would be, you know, typically married. So I think that probably factored into it. But the fact is that 20% was the number that you had sex more if you were a pot smoker
well,
than
let's go,
non-pot.
Let's go to Danny,
smokers.
Who's calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Danny?
Hey, Danny.
Hello. Nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you.
I'm a boomer from Brooklyn now, living in Queens, and I've been using regular marijuana on a regular basis for the past 55 years. Excuse me.
That's
right. I just wanted to say throughout my whole life, no, pot has not made me more sexual. You know, that always has been the same, you know, wild and crazy.
Very nice, Danny.
Because I'm an Italian. But it doesn't make me go to sleep. As a matter of fact, the only time you can overdose is, you know, that's what it does to you, puts you to sleep. But it does make me very, very hungry. As a matter of fact, I'm retired now, I'm disabled, and I'm really enjoying the
eating.
Well, now, has it led to you having to now use NJDiet.com because you're so grossly overweight, Danny?
Yeah, I'm grossly overweight. I'm probably going to need that, yeah.
All right, hold on.
There you go.
Hold on, Danny. NJDiet.com to your rescue. I'm going to put Danny on hold. Please, would you give him the information? Because pot has led to him stacking the fat on his rack, sort of like Shamu! El Jefe, Chris Christie, who couldn't be a worse opponent of people smoking marijuana, right? See, he's got the Shamu look.
God, there's nothing that makes me laugh harder than hearing that whale sound.
Shamu! Anyway, let's go to Ben, who's calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Ben?
How's it going, folks? I'm a veteran pothead here, a major happy player in the game.
Congratulations.
Thank you, thank you. It's been hard work, but I do what I can, you know?
Good for you and for the team.
I don't think that it would do what you're saying for, like, a first-time smoker, Juliet. I think that's why your man had that issue. But as people who smoke all the time, yes, it could definitely get you more in the mood.
Well, he wasn't a first-time smoker. Oh, I can assure you of that. No, he was definitely not a first-time smoker. But
so he just... But it just knocked him out, but that didn't usually happen to him, right?
No. I mean, this is, I think, like I said, Amsterdam, you know, that whole pot, you know, choices, there are lots of strong choices there.
Yeah, and I think Samuel Hefe, Chris Christie, needs to toke a few times. He needs a little toke or two.
I would agree. He really needs to lighten up in many ways.
I'm getting yelled at by my husband, by the way, on my text messages.
Now, your husband, who obviously has been a user, because he's in the music industry where a lot of people have used.
Yeah.
Did he ever try to shotgun you with a joint?
What does that mean?
Oh, that means, you know.
Oh, like when you take a puff of it and you blow it in the other person's. No, yeah. No. I mean, I'm not, nah, that's not my, nah.
Well, you should suggest that to him.
Why?
Tell him, I want to be shotgunned.
That sounds creepy. Is there like a whole other story that you're not telling me?
No.
I'll ask
This is
him.
A new experience.
He's listening
for you.
Right now, so let's see what he says about that.
You're a newlywed couple, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is how many marriages for you?
None of your business.
And you never got shotgun before. So look, this is a new experience.
Well, yeah.
1-800.
Totally a different experience.
848-WABC. Does pot make you more sexually active, give you the munchies, or put you to sleep? 1-800-848-9222.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Little sister shotgun, oh yeah. Hey, little sister, who's your Superman? Hey, little sister shotgun. It's a nice day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding.
Look at how you just wove all these things in about me and my life.
Start again.
Oh, I love Billy Idol. Although he's a coke freak, used to score in Washington Square Park.
Oh, weren't they all?
But he's singing there about shotgunning the one you love.
But he wasn't talking about that kind of shotgun. He was talking about a shotgun wedding, Curtis, which you are well aware of.
I thought maybe he was talking about how a certain grunge rocker perished from this plane when his... Courtney Love wife took that gun right underneath his chin.
Oh, I totally agree with you.
And fired him into the hereafter.
I swear, I'm not. Did you see that documentary?
Yes.
I don't know why I'm whispering because everybody can hear me.
Yeah, but you know,
I just want to pretend like this is.
You
off,
do.
Off
you
the
do
record.
Believe he didn't kill himself.
I totally.
Courtney Love, right? Come on.
I mean, I don't want to be like
right underneath.
I'm sued for this. They're all coming at me lately, but yeah, I kind of do. Jeez, that's horrible, you guys.
Anyway, let's go to Cliff, who's calling from Rockaway. Welcome to WABC, Cliff.
Curtis, God bless, and your partner there. I'm sorry, I am in absence of her name.
Juliet, and that typically happens when people smoke pot.
Well, then you have your candidate.
So what's up?
I'm 62, and you want an order of this, so I'll give you the order. It's smoke, sex, and blaring rock and roll.
Yeah.
And then a nap. And then some kind of a snack.
Now, you see, he could hang out with your husband.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, he can. My husband will be able to take the nap with him.
And they'll do puff, puff, pass.
Curtis Lewa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Lewa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Lewa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Lewa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Curtis, I have to ask you a question.
Yeah.
I know we're getting into a very controversial topic, but this is a controversial topic to my life. I just went into the water closet right around the corner here. Whose toothbrush is just laying there next to like a drooling soap, personal soap bottle thing. Like, what's going on in that bathroom?
What are your roots in the UK? Water closet? We don't.
It says WC on it.
It's a turlet.
Okay, it's a loo. Turlet. I call it the loo.
A loo.
Are you
UK centric?
I totally am. I probably should be living over
there.
I'm sure some people. I truly am. Yes.
Oh, so you worship the queen, huh?
I do. I love royalty.
Really?
I'm obsessed with it.
Biggest welfare deadbeat in the world.
Fascinating to watch, though.
Oh, maybe you'd like to have a picture of the queen up in your house.
I would love to. I wish I could be invited to Buckingham Palace. I would take St. James's Palace. I mean, whatever.
You should be a refugee. You should go back to the UK where your roots are.
My roots?
Yeah, roots. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of a refugee, briefly in his career, there was that transition time. He was an L.A. Dodger. They were in the World Series. I wonder if Bush 41 is going to let you on any women tonight, or are they going to have to Velcro his arms when he's there in Minute Maid Park to watch Game 3 of Houston Astros versus the Dodgers? But anyway, Mike Piazza, the Italian Stallion, number 31, the throwback New York Met jersey, transitioned in the same year from the Dodgers to the Marlins to the Mets, all within just one triangle period.
When was the last time he was a Dodger? Because I had a little run-in with him. It wasn't bad. But when was that?
Well, that was the start of his career. That's when he was with Tommy Lasorda, who he was related to from Pennsylvania, and he had a stellar career there.
95-ish? Six?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, see, I hate the Mets, so it means nothing to me. But for a lot of our listeners here, they adore the Italian Stallion. There's no doubt about it, number 31. And he's going to be here on Monday. That's right, this Monday, the day before Halloween, October 30th at 6 p.m., you can come up and you'll be sitting in Stage 17, which is a palazzo.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's like a little Carnegie Hall.
Who's he talking with?
I don't know who's actually interviewing him. It would be interesting if somebody in our control room knew that.
Is
but
it
they obviously
Stage
don't.
17, you're saying?
Yeah, Stage 17.
Which is the coolest invention ever. I love it.
Yeah, and the only way to win is you had to listen all week to Bernie and Sid prior to the show, 9 to 12, and to the show, 12 to 3. And if you call now, 212-268-WABC, and keep our producer, phone screener, Justin B. Love, the invader from Alabama, busy, you're going to get to see Mike Piazza Monday night on the stage here on the 17th floor, Stage 17 of WABC. Seating is limited. Or just go to WABCradio.com now and enter in order to win. But meantime, we're high atop Madison Square Garden,
cool.
The great facilities that are provided to us by NJDiet.com to do this show. And let me make mention of a subject we do from time to time, Juliet Huddy. And in almost every occasion, our audience says, send them back, send them back, send them back.
All right.
We're talking about illegal aliens, a.k.a. undocumented aliens.
I know, but hold on before you go crazy about this one. This is a 10-year-old we're talking about.
That's right. A 10-year-old girl with cerebral palsy has been detained by federal immigration authorities in Texas after she passed through a Border Patrol checkpoint on her way to a hospital to undergo emergency gallbladder surgery.
Yeah, so this happened overnight. She was transferred from some sort of medical center in Laredo, Texas.
Well, that's where her parents were, and they're undocumented. They're illegals.
Right. So she goes to Corpus Christi. This is around 2 a.m. Border Patrol agents stopped the ambulance that she's in. The agents allowed her to... She was allowed to go on to Driscoll Children's Hospital. But these agents followed the ambulance the rest of the way there. I don't really know how long the ride was, but let's just say, you know, they're tailgating this ambulance with this sick child. Then they waited outside her room until she was released from the hospital.
That's right, and she has been sent to a facility outside of San Antonio where migrant children who arrive alone in the United States from Central America or Mexico are usually held, even though her parents are over in Laredo, 150 miles away. She is scheduled to be deported as she convalesces and gets back on track. Ladies and gentlemen, is this the Trump enforcement edict that he had talked about during the campaign? Because I thought he was going to go after the really bad hombres, which he is doing. MS-13 is doing a very effective job, unlike the Obama administration, which is ignoring them. They're going after some known drug dealers who have been bringing in weight. We're not talking about nickel and dime bags.
Yeah, I mean, but Curtis, we spent, we spent an inordinate amount of energy on and resources, by the way, to follow this little girl, treat her like she was some, you know, some crazy drug dealing, you know, guy from Colombia, you know, or wherever. I mean, this is, she's trying to get specialized medical care. She's a little kid. It often requires kids to go farther north, you know.
Well, she's originally from Mexico. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to ask all of you, once she convalesces in that detention camp outside of San Antonio, should we send her south of the border, separate her from her family, who probably also will be deported at some point? They are off in Laredo. They also are illegal aliens. Or should we make an exception here because of this medical emergency and allow her to stay in the United States? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
And remember, she's 10 years old. You know, should we be devoting our resources to bigger threats and, you know, look at these cases as though they're specialized cases? And this is a little girl. Are you going to say no? Go back to Mexico?
Well, apparently some in Texas are saying that she should have gotten that medical care in Mexico where she was from, although obviously we can't put it on the same standard as the kind of care that would be provided in an American hospital in
Exactly.
Corpus Christi.
And her, you know, family likely is not paying taxes, I would imagine.
Well, maybe. If they're working, they may have a fake Social Security card, so they're probably paying some taxes.
I know. So, I mean, it's, you know, you understand both sides of the arguments, but I definitely lean on the let this little girl, you know.
Well, let's go.
Up. She
let's,
did. She
let's
did
go to
surgery.
The phones and see if our listeners agree with you, Juliet Huddy. Sergeant Dan, first up in the queue. Welcome to WABC.
Hey, Curtis. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Curtis, number one, I feel for you with the Crohn's because my son has it, and it's a daily battle, so keep hanging in there.
Thank you, Sarge.
You know what? I know she's 10, and I feel bad for her, but who's footing the bill for her for this major operation that she's got to go through? And then you times that by, once she gets it, times it by the thousands that are going to have the same need that come over. So here's your basic dilemma.
Yeah,
well, it'll be covered, Sarge, by Medicaid for a special exemption for Medicaid, and that means we, the taxpayers, are footing the bill.
And the family was not able to afford her therapies in Mexico. They didn't have the kind of coverage or the money to be able to afford anything. So I understand your logic.
Well, no, I feel bad for her, but now, you know, so then let's not have any borders at all, and let's give everybody coverage, and we'll just pay taxes and foot the bill.
All right, so that's one against you here, Juliet Huddy. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Vinny, who I believe is calling from Lakewood. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC.
Hey, Vinny.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a compassionate person. There are laws in this country. We have American citizens that are denied health care coverage for programs. I just find it appalling that we always have to have the bleeding heart for people that break into our country illegally to help them all the time. We don't help our own people. We spend more money on Syrian refugees coming in and give them more money in a month than we give people on Social Security. And I think the American people are just getting tired of this. Let Mexico send the money to take care of this family across the border, and as long as they're paying for it, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, Juliet, they won't pay for the wall, but maybe they'll pay for the care of this 10-year-old with cerebral palsy.
Well, that would certainly,
who had her gallbladder removed.
That would certainly, I think, make people a lot happier over this side of the border.
That's two in a row who are against you.
Well,
you're a bleeding heart, according to me.
I understand that. I get the argument, and I actually probably have argued that argument as well. I'm looking at this picture of this little girl, and it just kind of, you know, yeah, I guess I am a bleeding heart.
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Gary in Inwood. Welcome to WABC, Gary.
Good afternoon, folks. By nature, I'm a hardliner, and I'm very strong on immigration. But let's have a little compassion and do the right thing. Let's not have a heart of stone. Take care of this little child. It's the right thing to do.
Aw, Gary.
Now, Gary, after she fully convalesces in that detention camp outside of San Antonio, Should she be allowed to stay in the United States with her two illegal parents in Laredo?
I would revisit that and see what the overall situation is. But once again, I'm a hardline guy. This one just touched my heart. And,
Wow.
I would revisit that part.
You got some tactical air support here.
Did my arguing have anything to do with it, Gary?
No, your argument had nothing to do with that.
Okay, fine.
1-800-848-WABC.
Well,
let's
Gary.
Go to Shauna in Long Island. Welcome to WABC, Shauna.
Hi. How are you?
Hi, Shauna.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
So what do you think?
So I just want to say, I think that, you know, it's not this 10-year-old's fault that her parents brought her here illegally. She has no control over what her parents do. As a child, the adults bring her here to help her get help, but I don't think that she should be penalized because her parents are bringing her illegally.
Shauna, your words are just making me all mushy. I'm with you on this.
So, yeah. Shauna, the taxpayers are going to have to pay the freight for her medical expenses, not just now, because she's going to continue to have severe medical problems because of her condition. You're suggesting that we just have to suck it up?
Well, yeah, I think that's an issue, too, and that's where it's hard to decipher between what really needs to be done. But this situation for this little girl, I think it's hard to blame her and send her back and not give her medical attention that she needs because her parents brought her here.
Yeah, and, you know, since Donald Trump was inaugurated and then basically early September, arrests, the number of immigration arrests have rose more than 40%. So there is an effort being made to stem the flow. You know, this person and her family got a, we don't know when they illegally came over the border, but the fact is they're here.
Wow. So it's a tie now. Two people, Bleeding Hearts, side with you. Two other of our callers, led by Sergeant Dan, say they got to go.
Well, I don't know that they were. They're not bad guys for feeling this way. I mean, they just, you know.
Well, let's see if there's a tiebreaker here from Anthony in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Anthony.
How you doing?
Hey.
I've had better days.
So I think she should go.
Oh, you just you blew my lead, buddy. Why? Sorry. Why do you think she should go?
Well, one, her parents are illegals. They're probably working for cash and not even paying taxes. And I think that's enough right there. We shouldn't be supporting everybody. Maybe Mexico could take care of their own citizens.
So you see, Juliet, Huddy, they may not want to pay for the wall that Trump still wants to build, but they should pay for their own citizens getting medical care in the United States. Can you agree with that, Juliet?
Well, Huddy? I think that would be nice if they agreed to do that. I'm showing you the picture of this little girl, Rosa.
Yeah, well,
Rosa,
so why doesn't one of the richest men in the world, Carlos Slim?
Carlos, exactly.
Who owns part of the stock of the New York Times and other major U.S. corporations.
Hey, that's a great point.
Why doesn't he pay for this? Because you know what? There are so many Mexican billionaires in Mexico City. It has per capita, per person, as many billionaires as anywhere in the world. And they don't donate jack diddly squat.
And isn't he the richest person in the world? He was up until
number two, until Jeff Bezos.
I'm gonna Google this.
Starts because he's buying up the world. I think Jeff Bezos is number one. Microsoft is number two, and I think Carlos Slim is number three. But the difference is,
I feel like he was
Bezos and Mr. Microsoft will make donations.
We got massive amounts of donations.
But Mexican
billionaires,
they don't even donate the hair off their chinny chin chin.
Well, hold on a second. It says here in Wikipedia, and we know we can all trust Wikipedia, that he is, it says, business magnate, investor, and philanthropist.
Yeah, I'd like to know what philanthropy. What, to Lebanon? Because he's Lebanese living in Mexico.
As of July 2017, $67.9 billion is how much this man has.
Yeah, so he should take care of
it. He should pay for Rosa Maria.
Yeah, 800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77-WABC.
So, Juliet Huddy, we have this 10-year-old illegal alien Mexican girl. She had gallbladder surgery in a hospital in Corpus Christi.
Yep.
She has cerebral palsy. But L'Immigre, Immigration and Naturalization Service, wants to deport her back to Mexico. Yes or no, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to Joe. Giuseppe in Long Island. Welcome to WABC, Giuseppe.
Hey, good afternoon. I got to say a couple of things here. Number one, I always hear stories and see it in the paper about some poor kid who's got a cleft palate or who's got some rare disease. He's over in Africa, over in Europe, he's in Russia somewhere, and they bring him to this country and do the surgery for nothing. You have Doctors Without Borders, some group that's contributing to the surgery. Why should this case be any different? I don't understand. Is it because the girl is Mexican? Listen, I'm all for secure borders. Forget about the illegal alien part. This country has a moral responsibility because of our blessings to help people less fortunate. I'm not saying open the borders and let everybody in, but I'm all for this little girl needs surgery. If they can handle it in Mexico, we do it here and
well,
take care of this poor little girl.
There you go. And to that point, I did do my Wikipedia-ing, Googling, and I found out that Carlos Slim, who was the richest man in the world, is now number six on the richest person in the world stage.
I feel. But Joe is siding against you. Now the audience is stacked against you.
Absolutely not.
Oh,
I'm not siding against her. I think we should be helping this girl out.
Thank you.
Carlos Slim. They won't take care of their own people. We'll take care of them.
There you go, Joe.
And think of other countries, too, that also have these billionaires, these oligarchs. How much do they contribute to the welfare of their own people? In many instances, they throw nickels around like manhole covers.
Especially here in New York City, by the way.
Right. The Red Chinese. Zip. In India. Zip. In Russia. Zip.
You know how much the real estate here now is being scooped up by the Russian oligarchs and
Eurotrash and others. And then they flip the condos, right? And they end up making money.
Pricing everybody out. Nobody can afford to live here. Nobody from New York can afford to live in New York.
Anyway, let's go to Ken, who's calling from Glen Cove. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Ken?
Hi. Great show. Love it.
Oh.
I'm a bleeding heart also. I think the girl should have an operation as soon as all of our vets get theirs.
Yeah. As soon as all of our vets get the many operations they've been promised through the veterans' hospitals. And still waiting.
Great point.
Juliet, who gets their operation first, the vets or the 10-year-old
girl? Don't put me on the spot and
no,
have
no,
to
I
give
got
an
to.
Answer to this question.
I got to.
Well, I mean, I can't. I mean, I guess I have to. I'd say our vets. I mean, they're Americans.
But she'll
die.
They
served our country. Don't do that to me. Oh, now I sound like a
she'll
murderous.
Die. Juliet,
horrible,
she'll die.
Heartless. Don't stop it.
A vet?
No, I just told you. Oh, don't do this to me. I just told you. What do you think? No. Don't twist this on me. What do you think? You've been silent the whole time on your opinion about this.
Look, we give operations to the Taliban in Guantanamo trying to kill us.
That's very true.
We give them prosthetics so they can go back into the field of battle. We give them
new teeth. Which I find horrific.
Right. And so, look, I would say Taliban, no.
Taliban.
Mexican girl, yes.
Yeah.
Veterans should be at the top of the queue.
Amen.
Let's go to Kevin, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Kev?
Hey, Curtis. How are you? Long time listener, man. Big fan.
I've had better days.
yeah, sorry to hear, man. Hey, listen, I'm a military veteran myself. I served in the United States Marine Corps.
Yeah.
I have a lot of simplify, brother. I got a lot of compassion for people, but this is the issue. The taxpayer is hemorrhaging money off all these illegals that come in. I mean, you look on Facebook or any one of these social medias, they could start a GoFundMe page, but the reason they didn't was because they tried to do what they could do, and they realized that in Mexico it wasn't going to work. It's tragic. It's sad. But the fact is that we can't do it anymore. I mean, you go to the Staten Island Ferry, there's probably about 10 people at any given hour down there that needs some kind of surgery, if not some kind of head medication. So, I mean, do I feel bad for her? Yeah, it's sad, but I don't think we should be taking everybody in. She was healthy enough to get her over the border. They could start a GoFundMe page and send a doctor over there. Where's all these liberal doctors that want to go over there and help?
Getting a lot of attention through the media on this story. I mean, the story appeared in the New York Times, among other places. So maybe some of these, these billionaires down in Mexico or perhaps even here in the United States or across the world would be like,
you do
would be
realize,
helpful to jump in.
That you lost this one with our audience.
I didn't. I don't believe
our
I did.
Our audience sided against you,
Juliet. I have not been doing an actual tally, but I think that they were, it was pretty much 50-50.
Juliet, it's not you. Every time we do this subject, it doesn't matter who the illegal alien is.
I think you underestimate the audience. And first of all, you make it sound like you're a bunch of heartless people living here in the tri-state area, and they're not. They're saying we feel horrible for this little girl, but, you know, the fact is that we pay our taxes.
Nice spin, Juliet.
From the best, didn't I?
But anyway, let's get our news headlines and updates from Deborah.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Figured you'd like this one, Curtis.
Yeah, it's Blackwater Rising. Poco Poco. This isn't as good as the...
Well, it hasn't gotten going.
Right. Oh, you mean it's just cranking up?
It is. Here it comes. All right. You're going to go... You're going to start rocking.
Ready. Oh, yes.
See?
Oh, yes. Hey, Brian Mondaluke, send me the link to this. Blackwater Rising.
You don't understand. Every time you get so excited, when it makes me so happy. I love it. I told you.
Headbangers ball here, and we're not MTV.
No, we're not, but we like our rock and metal, don't we?
That is a great song.
Thank you. You're welcome.
You know, you have a very good touch for these heavy metal songs.
I do, don't I?
Yeah, I've agreed.
It's more like rock, but...
85% of your selection so far, Juliet, honey. And that's amazing because normally I'm very grimaced and a real curmudgeon when it comes to other people's music choice.
Well, I figured that was a perfect song, not only because I knew that you would like it because you already listened to one of their other songs, Brother Go On, and you loved it. But the title of it is No Halos, which segues perfectly into this next topic. You know who, like, if you had to say a Hollywood celebrity who has just a perpetual halo over her head, who would you say? Somebody that's just loved from everybody. She's loved by heterosexuals, the LGBTQ community, old, young. Who would you say that would be?
Let me think for a second.
Somebody that she, no matter what she does, no matter what award show she hosts, she's loved.
Oh, Meryl Streep.
No.
Well, close,
okay,
right?
I'll give it to you. It's Ellen DeGeneres.
Ellen DeGeneres? And wait a second.
I'm saying that she has a perpetual halo over her head.
I don't think
she never seems to go to do anything wrong.
Let me tell you something. It's sort of like Rosie O'Donnell had.
Oh, go.
When she did her midday program, remember, on Channel 7, ABC.
No, this is a completely different thing.
All right, but let me take you back
to
the Bill Clinton years.
Okay.
Slowly I turn, step by step. There's Ellen DeGeneres, who had outed herself as a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked across the room, and all of a sudden there was Anne Heche, a rock-ribbed heterosexual,
mm-hmm.
and their eyes merged into pools of amour, and Anne Heche immediately said, I'm a lesbian.
Okay.
You bought that story?
Yeah, because they were together for quite a while.
Okay.
I think that Anne maybe, you know.
All right, you're gullible.
Hold on, what are you saying?
I'm saying I think there was more for the PR value than for the reality. I seriously doubt that happened at a meeting at the White House that Bill Clinton was at, and they weren't paying attention to him.
Wait, you're saying that he? I mean, naturally, Bill
Clinton
is in the room.
He's probably getting off on it.
Oh God! Oh.
Well, look, he's super lech.
Oh jeez. Well, anyway, the point of the whole story is that typically, Most people, when you think of Ellen DeGeneres, you think of she's just an angel. She's funny. She doesn't seem to, you know, piss anybody off. I mean, she just seems like a cool chick.
She dances.
Well, unfortunately, she dances, exactly. She's very entertaining. I love her. She put an Instagram or a tweet. I can't remember which one it was, but it was a happy birthday message to Katy Perry. And remember, this is in this current climate of the Harvey Weinstein. Just saying it because it's out there, a Bill O'Reilly sort of thing going on. Ellen DeGeneres, who has done the hashtag MeToo thing, she has been critical of some of these men. She tweets, happy birthday at Katy Perry. It's time to bring out the big balloons. And it's a picture of Ellen staring at the chest, the very well-endowed chest of Katy Perry. And so people are now freaking out. And just attacking Ellen DeGeneres for making these, for posting this tweet or Instagram, whatever.
All right. So Katy Perry, who has big bazoonies, there's no doubt about it.
Bazoonies, bazookas.
B-42s, right. you know, in a Playtex bra.
Probably.
I'm looking at this picture, and there's no doubt that Ellen DeGeneres is salivating and looking at her mammary gland.
But she's standing, Ellen DeGeneres is standing next to Portia de Rossi, her girlfriend or wife. I don't remember which one it is. But so she's got her significant other standing next to her while she's jokingly looking, putting her face essentially right into
almost giving Katy Perry a Brumsky. Yeah. she's got her face almost in her mammary glands. And by the way, Katy Perry, I noticed she has a bit of a butch cut now. She has suggested in the past that's a hot thing.
No, pixie cuts are hot right now.
Well, what is that? She has suggested in the past that she goes both ways, right? Right? So why would people get upset over a bisexual flashing a mammary glands and the lesbian Ellen DeGeneres salivating over it?
Well, first of all, I don't know that she said she is bisexual. I think she's experimented. We don't know. But I think the theory is that Ellen DeGeneres is a lesbian who is leering at, and I'm not actually saying this because I think this is completely benign.
Well, let me give you an example. What? Let's open up our phone lines.
Okay, yeah.
Is this double standard, ladies and gentlemen? Here's Ellen DeGeneres definitely leering at Katy Perry's bazoonies, salivating. If a guy did that, that would be it. That would be a form of sexual harassment. Right. Is it a double standard? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. There is a classic photo. In fact, more copies of this photo have been made than I think almost any other, including the Kennedy assassination. I think it was 1957.
Oh, I remember when I saw it. In Times Square?
No.
Which one are you talking about?
Jane Mansfield, the blonde bombshell actress who had maybe the biggest bazoonies, mammary glands of all.
Mother of Mariska Hargitay.
Right. She's sitting at a table, and next to her is the other woman with big bazoonies, Sophia Loren. And she's staring at her with a look of disgust, like, because your bazoonies are bigger than mine, I got to sit with you, and people are going to be commenting about that. That's the complete opposite look than what Ellen DeGeneres was showcasing, because she obviously sent it out. She's
right.
Proud of it. To Katy Perry, who I don't believe has complained about that.
Well, first of all, sounds like they're friends. I mean, I think they have a friendly relationship, so I don't think this is offensive in any way at all.
How friendly?
I don't know that, Curtis. I haven't been invited into the boudoir of either, but let's go to the phones and find out.
Yes, let's go to Giuseppe.
Listeners.
As you're blushing here at WABC in Middle Village. Welcome to WABC, Joey.
How you doing, buddy? We met over with Bob Holden. We know each other a little bit.
Oh, yeah, great candidate. Yeah, great candidate to sack that crooked one, Elizabeth Crowley, in the city council race.
She's done nothing for us for the last 30 years. Whatever it is, the whole family is it's garbage, you know?
You got it.
And I'll tell you, it's a double standard. It's the same thing with Harvey Weinstein. There's no doubt about it.
What do you mean? Explain.
Well, I mean, it's a lesbian looking at another girl and making a comment in a sexual manner. So I don't see any difference.
So you're saying if a guy did this, let's say it was Curtis Sliwa, actually Curtis does all sorts of crazy things and nobody seems to care. But you know what I'm saying.
Actually, when I was unattached, I got to be honest, Joe, when I was unattached in 4 years, when I would come on to the set of Good Day Early Call New York that Juliet Huddy was hosting, and I would do it 3 times a week, I would leer at your bazoonies. You remember?
You would actually... He would actually like point them out at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
He would say, "Wow, look at the outfit you're wearing. You know, this is makes you look
busty. Isn't this
busty.
A bit risque?"
Makes me want to snack on you. It was hysterical.
We all did it, except until we got married.
Well, yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah, well, now that I got Nancy Regula, my home slice, that's over. See?
That's all Curtis ever talks about.
I'm only looking at you from the neck up.
Well, there's nothing much to look at anyway.
Anyway, let's go to the phones. Next up in the queue is Alex, who's calling from Jersey City. Welcome to Curtis
City.
And Juliet here at WABC. Alex.
How are you guys? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Hello.
I just want to comment that the double standard is so outrageous that it makes me want to vomit. If this was a man, he would be fired, run out of town, charges are repressed against him. We just had a Republican congressman who had an affair, and he suggested to this woman who had gotten pregnant to have an abortion. That alone required that he resign his congressional seat and leave town when Democrats continually have affairs and they're aggrandized by the liberal left.
Alex, do you really think this is the privy of one party and not shared by both parties and men in general, regardless of their political ideology?
I'm not saying that the behavior is different. What I'm saying is that the treatment is different. Barney Frank ran around congressional halls, you know, having any young boy that would allow him to be had, and nothing happened to him.
Okay, well, hold on. Really quick, Alex. I do have to say, though, if you look on social media, Ellen DeGeneres is being slammed. She's being skewered. So it kind of contradicts your point because she is being attacked.
By the way, he mentioned Barney Frank. That was not the most egregious. I believe there was a congressman from New Bedford, Fall Rivers, Jerry Studs, Democrat, liberal, progressive, who was nailing male interns in the House men's bathroom.
Oh.
And yet, he got reelected. Because naturally, it's Massachusetts, where almost anything goes. Anyway, you remember the call yesterday? I recognize his voice. It's Matthew Mary, one of the most prestigious criminal defense lawyers in the business. He's represented many mobsters choking
on their lobsters. He called in yesterday?
Yeah, he called in yesterday. Remember this call? Because he has a conspiracy theory about this.
No, I'm a lawyer, and all of these ancient cases are coming out of the woodwork all at the same time. And forgive me for being conspiratorial, but it seems to me I'm scared to death to talk to a woman. I think this is a conspiracy to obliterate heterosexuality from the face of the earth.
You see?
What?
And that's a well-respected criminal defense attorney who now feels there is a conspiracy against men.
I mean, I think my reaction yesterday, that sums up how I feel today.
Our numbers, 1-800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
Juliet Huddy in the house.
Oh, I love this song.
To JJ, we go in Long Island. Welcome to WABC, JJ.
Thank you, Curtis. Thank you, Julie. Great show. I have an opinion on this. I am a lesbian. I'm in the community. And I think that if you are using a part of a woman's anatomy to get a cheap joke across, I think it's the same exact thing. It is appalling, and it shows you how out of touch Ellen really is.
Oh, all right.
But doesn't it matter, JJ, that the person who is, quote, the victim of this, Katy Perry, seemed to be enjoying it? She didn't have a jaundiced look on her face. She hasn't responded negatively. Aren't we making a big deal out of something that two people participated in and they really don't have any problem with it?
And this is the problem with men and women, because women will stand there with a smile on their face, acting as if this is something that they appreciate because they need to get through it. And men don't get the clue that it's just inappropriate.
But I think
the conversation has to change.
But I think sometimes you have to remember, if it's a friend and you have a great close relationship, like I've made jokes about my girlfriends and their, you know, their cleavage or whatever. It's like, we're friends. We can do that to each other, and it's not a problem.
Yeah, did you post it on the media, the internet?
I probably actually on Facebook within my friendship circle. Yeah, I'm sure we probably have.
God,
I think it's probably. I'm in the community, and there's a lot of older lesbians, and when younger lesbians come around, they are completely inappropriate with the way they speak to them, and I feel for them.
Hey, you know, yeah, I think you're going to have to take Juliet Huddy to boot camp out there, JJ.
Let's do it.
Because, boy, you're perving off your girlfriend.
Oh, stop that.
You're posting it on Instagram.
Be quiet.
On Facebook.
Once in a while.
You're sending it out in the virtual world.
Just in my
there.
Own little circle.
Oh, you're just as guilty as Ellen DeGeneres.
You're not allowed into my circle.